I'm Coulter DeVries, owner of Ranch Investor Advisory and Brokerage Services. I'm an accredited land consultant with the Realtor Land Institute and proud member of ASFMRA.
The Ranch Investor Podcast is the most downloaded and informative industry-specific content that intrigues while entertains.
Mr. Whitney, good morning.
How are you doing, man? I have to be careful. I'm talking to a Colt in a little bit.
Okay.
Get your name right.
No worries. Well, thanks for jumping on. Before we get started, just to give you a little background, Ranch Investor, kind of my intentions with this recording is to, we talk about, you know, all things investing in ranches and land owners, ranch owners. And retirement is not an issue that we've touched on. And so what does retirement look like for single asset wealth? Because most landowners are, most ranchers are primarily single asset wealth. And how do you retire without selling the ranch?
Good question.
And actually, I think we've already jumped into the podcast. So let's just keep going on that. But first, Roger, let's get you introduced. Where are you located, and what is Rock Retirement?
I'm located in Fort Worth, Texas. Know a little bit about ranches, but I'm originally from outside of Detroit, so that's not my. My pedigree is a little bit odd. Rocking retirement is simply integrating the point of retirement in the first place. A lot of us sort of fall into it and are worried about the outside world and lack the confidence to actually lean in and create a great life. And then we end up dying with too much money. Rocking retirement is finding that balance between having an amazing life today and not being destitute physically or financially, you know, when we're 80 or 90.
Now, when you say rocking, it sounds like you're balancing a bunch of variables, but were also a rock star, were you not?
I was not.
Oh, okay.
A rock star? Where'd that come from?
Well, I think there is a Roger Whitney who is a musician. Is that not you?
I'm not. I think there's a Roger Whitaker.
Okay.
Who was like a musician, like a folks type of musician a while back.
And then with Detroit. So you grew up in Detroit. I was like, maybe you and Kid Rock were just
kicking it. I have no musical ability whatsoever, ever, Coulter.
Likewise.
So I think of rock. I think of it as in the musical sense of really leaning in and having a amazing life. Right. It's a verb. But to your point, there is that balance. I think of, I think a teeter totter or a seesaw is a really good visual for a lot of decision making. And when we think of retirement, if you're 60, let's say, there's a tension that we constantly live with is we want to use whatever wealth we've accumulated and energy we still have to create a great life. Why we still have our energy, right? And that's sort of the YOLO lifestyle. We want to have a great life today. But on the other end of the fulcrum is we know that in our 70s or 80s or even 90s, we want to make sure that version of ourselves is okay, right? And every dollar or everything that we do today could cost us. And lacking a organized framework of how to think about these things, most people will sacrifice their life right now for tomorrow.
That's what we've been taught.
So there's a balance there, huh?
That's what we've been taught.
Well, it's like gym day, right? We go to the gym and all we do is work, upper body. We're good at accumulating assets. And we've been taught that because that's generally how we've built our estate in the sense of a ranch. I know the ranchers I know, I have a few clients that are ranchers and their number one thing, the way they build wealth is they buy land, right?
More and more, always buying. They'll buy land right up to the day they die. It's all about dying with the most land.
Yeah. And anything adjacent. Oh yeah. We just got this, you know, 100 acres over here. The two guys I think of are in Clyde, Texas. They're cattle ranchers and they're always buying more land because they've been there forever. They're second generation, two brothers that run it. And they're just slowly buying everything around them. And so we're good at accumulating. And especially ranchers too, because it's so physically intensive and mentally intensive. We're good at working. And that's good. I mean, I think happy people have projects. We should work until we die. But it's easy to fall there because we're comfortable with it. We've done it for forever. And we forget to enjoy some of it, whether that's creating experiences with grandkids or children or community. It's easy to be, you know, back to the gym metaphor, really good at accumulation and working and really underdeveloped in the softer side of things of creating memories and actually taking some time to breathe. And what can happen, not with everybody, but what can happen is we get older, and usually it happens in our 80s, and I've had these conversations, and then we start to look back of, yeah, what could I have done? What memories could I have created with people? What impact could I have had outside of just accumulating more land and working every day?
Well, this seems to be the next step. Talking about retirement and Rock Retirement Club, you have a peer group there. Seems like that would be a next step from a previous podcast guest that I had on who was part of a FIRE, Financial Independence
Retire early
movement. And, you know, I would assume that that does come with a lot of sacrifices if you want to retire early. But then
that whole concept, that acronym, Coulter, just to pause on that, because I know a lot of people in that space. I like the financial independence. Retire early, I think, is a horrible idea.
Oh, really? So now we're in your world. Yeah, let's hear more about that.
Well, I think the idea of retirement, I'm 56. I don't have any plans to retire. And when I've done this for a long period of time, and I talk to, I've talked to thousands of people walking this journey. And when you ask them what they actually mean by retirement, it's generally not the lack of work. It's time freedom and the ability to have margin to do things other than work. And so I think we use this word retirement and we think of the brochures that we see. That all the happy people, the really fulfilled people that are quote unquote retired, are doing something. They may not be getting paid for it. They may be volunteering. It may be taking care of the grandkids. It may be, building furniture. I've seen all sorts of things. They're not doing nothing. So I think this idea of retiring early, for like your generation, because you're a young dude. I think financial independence gives you options. The key is to have options to be able to live a life that's more balanced than what traditional, at least career life is. Because I don't know how you grew up. I grew up, you just sacrifice, and then I'll be happy later on. And I think that's actually a bad way to think about it.
Well, I want to hear more about that, but let's get into how you came to being Rock Retirement Club. I mean, what was your journey? What was your path? I don't think you had a podcast 20 years ago, Roger. So how did you come to this? And then tell me about just that, the generational difference and how you sacrifice.
I'm a classically trained financial planner. So I've been working with individuals since 92-ish. And I had the normal iterations I started essentially in the early 90s. Because of the mentors around me, I was a stock trader. I traded technology stocks for 8 years, very unfulfilling. And then I grew up and got all of my certifications and then started my own firm in 2003 and built a firm in the more traditional way. But honestly, Coulter, what happened with me was I got to my mid-40s and I had had enough success business-wise where I had time on my hands. I could work a little less and make a good living and provide for my family. And I had that proverbial midlife crisis that you're not to yet. And
don't be so sure.
I think we have multiple midlife crises of it. This is what my life is supposed to be. And mine was around, I sort of had this realization I could provide for my family, serve a small number of people, and have a great life from that perspective. But I started to get haunted by, well, when I'm 60, 70, 80, what I don't want to wake up and say, what could I have done? So my answer to that question was I started a podcast because I think naturally out loud. And so I started it about 9.5 years ago now. So almost, you know, halfway through 20 years, I guess, to think publicly about questions that I was grappling with my clients. So, cause I work with clients, I walk life with them and I'm always dealing with, can I retire? Should we buy this? Should we do that? How do I navigate this decision? So I just started to think through the problems publicly, mainly for myself to sharpen my own saw, because I don't know if you've ever taught. One nice thing about teaching, in addition to being a practitioner, is you have to be very organized in your decision-making because you're communicating it. So it forced me to be organized. And then I just never stopped. And that helped me identify what's wrong with retirement planning. And there's a lot wrong with how it's traditionally done. And what is a more logical way, at least for me, of how it should be done that empowers people more to be stewards of their life. And that's how, and over time, over that 9.5 years, that led me to creating a process. We call it Agile Retirement Management, which is taking project management and applying it to retirement planning. And it's changed my life all for the better.
That's like agile processing, right? Or agile production, lean production.
Yeah. Agile project management is a production project management methodology originally talked about in the 70s that software developed, which is essentially, you know, the easiest way to describe it is the old way they used to build software and buildings actually was what they called waterfall, which was this huge bloated project where they tried to figure out everything in sequential order before they even started. And that's what I'm sure you won't remember this, but maybe some of your listeners will. That's when we used to buy Microsoft Office and have to download it onto our computer. And we'd have like 20 CD-ROMs and we just have to sit there and keep loading the CD-ROMs. That was done in what was called waterfall. They just built this big bloated piece of software. And then once you got it loaded, there was almost no mechanism for them to update it easily. And so Agile came about initially in the software world, to my recollection. And the best way to describe that is like your iPhone or your Android phone. When you create a product, you ship the essential minimal viable product that you want to get out that solves the initial need. And then you very quickly get feedback from using it and users to fix bugs and add features. And it happens really, really quickly. That's why we have all these updates on our phone that happen over and over and over again, because they're responding in real time to problems with the software, but also features that needed to be added. And so it's much more agile. And I think that is the way that any kind of planning should be done when it comes to financial planning as well.
So would you say the more traditional model then for retirement would be like a Gantt chart where it's, we're going to start this project and when we're 4 months into it or 14 years into it, we're going to reach this point and then we're going to move down to project B that will trigger project B and we're going to move into that for 5 years and that will trigger project C. Is it traditionally kind of a Gantt chart then?
Well, I think it traditionally it's creating that Gantt chart, which is really cumbersome and time consuming and not very approachable or meaningful for the participant, meaning the person that whose life it is, right? The Gantt chart never actually gets followed, but this is what a comprehensive retirement or financial plan is. So let's try to think of everything all at once, which means, and I've seen these meetings, I probably have hosted a few or two, that means you're going to sit in a meeting for hours. You're going to have multiple meetings and it's just going to get overwhelming. So you get very disinterested and disengaged very quickly. And as soon as you come up with that Gantt chart, as you referenced, or that comprehensive plan, it's all meaningless because you're just trying to get through it. And then you never actually implement it or look at it again. And that's the problem, right? Is that you never actually look at it. And it's not a living document that's meaningful for you. So you felt like you went through an exercise, but you don't know why the heck you went through it. And you still don't have any answers to your questions.
An exercise in futility.
Yes. Man, a few words. I like it. And then couple that with, and I think we were going to talk about this a little bit, is when it comes to retirement planning, the people that are taught to do retirement planning, which is are focused on investment assets as the hub of everything. You know, your 401ks, your liquid assets. And even for people that don't own ranches, your financial assets is what I would call them. That's my vernacular, is part of a whole, but it's not the focus. But everybody that does retirement planning are the investment guys, the financial advisors, and that's what they want to talk about. And that's only a piece of a much bigger whole, right? Even for people that don't own ranches. But when you own a ranch or you own a portfolio of real estate, whether it's ranch or commercial property or residential property, et cetera, you have a, you know, for financial advisors anyway, you have a very unusual net worth statement that they don't know how to navigate because they want to talk about portfolio management.
Liquid assets that they can move around based on
right.
annual yields and the value of those stocks.
Right, which is not the point of planning. Right. That's like going to an orthopedic who only wants to do surgery. If you go to an orthopedic surgeon to have a look at your shoulder, he's not thinking about how to fix your shoulder. He's thinking, now I'm making drastic comments here, but he's thinking about how do I operate on this shoulder to fix it, right? Where PT, physical therapy, might be appropriate or some other thing. So the what lens they use influences everything. And I imagine in your world, that's why a lot of ranchers, and I would say also business owners, don't even get what financial planning is or retirement planning is, because everybody they encounter is talking about the markets and doesn't want to talk about the real estate or cash flow or debt and all that other stuff.
Well, what about a generational difference? Because here you are, you're a Gen Xer, so you're naturally disgruntled, rebellious, you feel neglected, you guys have something to prove. I don't know what the chip on the shoulder is with you Gen Xers, but here you are.
Are you talking to me? Am I a Gen Xer? I don't know what
yeah.
I am.
Yeah, you'd be an Xer.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep, you're an X, and here I am a millennial, and we coined, unfortunately, I'm not proud of this one bit. We coined the term YOLO. You brought up YOLO, but you know, the majority of people are boomers who are retiring with this significant amount of wealth that's going to transfer to the next generation. Probably one reason for you Xers to be pissed, it's going to bypass you. It's going to come to us millennials. I forget what, 14 trillion or something huge like that. How do you communicate? Because there are so many generational differences. The boomers were raised in a household where parents made it through World War II. And some of you Xers were also raised in that household. World War II, the Great Depression, save, buy cash, keep low debt. And then you get to the millennials where it's spend, buy Bitcoin, leverage everything to your teeth.
I want to process this for a second.
Yeah, please do take your time, because the challenge is that you're approaching three different value sets, and now four with Z's, Gen Z's. They're making a lot of money. They're killing it. And in fact,
I think I don't really accept your premise, Coulter. in that these broad generalizations about generations apply to everybody.
Oh, no, everyone fits into one box, Roger.
It definitely simplifies the world, right?
Yeah.
It definitely simplifies the world. I didn't know what generation I'm a member of. And this is the problem, even with like average returns, nobody gets average. There is no homogeneous group of people. Most of the people that work for me are millennials, and they would not fit the stereotype that you would probably describe as a millennial. They're not. And most of the baby boomers that I work with, because that's primarily who I serve, people over 50, so I guess some Xers and boomers transitioning to retirement, they probably aren't going to fit the box in terms of attitude. None of them want to leave any money, by the way. Just FYI, I rarely encounter anybody that wants to leave money to kids or grandkids. They want to spend it or give it away. So FYI, don't count on it.
So don't count on this huge transfer coming.
It may be there because they lack the confidence to go use it to create a great world. So it may be there by default because of that lack of confidence, but that's generally not the desire. Now, that probably is different in the ranch world in terms of the multi-generational ranches, right? And it's sad, the statistics, I know, at least with businesses that are past generational tend not to do very well statistically.
So this is the challenge I have with financial advisors, my own 401k, is that we do get put into a box as a customer. And it's like, well, you're going to buy and hold. You just dollar cost average over time. The market always goes up 6% annualized. And this is the best thing for you to do. And it's like, well, I'm actually an individual. My income is drastically different than other millennials, 35 years old with two kids. Yeah, I mean, I probably have 80% of the similarities of my generation to some regards, but I don't want this traditional registered investment advisor program forced upon me. Like, where's my smorgasbord of options? Where's this custom tailored program for me?
I think when you talk to an advisor, you have to decide, what am I trying to accomplish here? What do I want when it comes to wealth? And find somebody that matches what it is you're trying to solve for. What do I want and what I'm trying to solve for is a question that we overlook a lot. And I think a lot of it, if you don't know that, it's easy to get mismatches, whether it's an advisor or a CPA or an attorney, because you want to find, if you're going to work with somebody, you want to find somebody that has a process or a way of thinking that matches what you're trying to solve, right? I'm not going to go to a muffler guy to replace my engine because he does mufflers. Just because it has auto muffler on the title doesn't mean I'm going to go to him to replace my engine, because he's a muffler guy. So some of that is knowing exactly what you want so you can go filter out very quickly all the people that don't apply.
So now in your retirement club, you have a bunch of peers, you have a mastermind group, a meetup in Fort Worth, annual conference. And this is kind of frustrating. It sounds like I have to do more work finding specialists tailored to different aspects of my financial goals, my retirement, my financial independence and early retirement, retire early, that there's not a one-stop shop. And I don't even know where to look to begin looking. What door do I knock on to find these experts?
I don't know why it's frustrating. It's your life and your money. You should do the work to find the right person. So I'm going to challenge you on that. That's part of it. That's a feature. It's not a bug. That's agency, right? So I'm gonna poke at you a little bit on that one. And if you want a one-stop shop, go to McDonald's. They're not going to make the hamburger the way you want it, right? They're going to make their hamburger. So a one-stop shop, by definition, is going to give you their process. the registered investment advisory space is probably the most likely space, at least in the regulated environment, where you will find the off market. You know, so think of it like Baskin Robbins, right? That's a good analogy. Most, you know, what is it, 31 flavors? So you're going to have 25 of the flavors are going to be different versions of bland McDonald's, Burger King, name your, you know, pick your poison. That's going to be like the advisory space. You're going to have 25 of the 31 flavors are going to be mainly in the main lane. You do have advisors that are very particular tastes, you know, the rocky road, things that the bland people aren't going to have, that, you know, maybe Coulter wants the Bitcoin expert. There are registered investment advisory firms that focus on Bitcoin. Let's use it as an example, or crypto. You just have to find them. And that is work. And well, that's part of managing money and managing your wealth. You got to do the work to go find people that want, you know, that deliver what you want.
Well, you hit on something, you put it back on me, that I often say you have to be your own best advocate. You have to always be your own agent.
Always.
And I'm at a point in my business, in my life, where I like to just outsource everything. My lawn mowing, my bookkeeping, my marketing. I mean, if I can outsource it to someone else who has the competitive advantage over me in my opportunity cost of time, I'm going to. And that's,
I don't disagree with that at all.
Well, and now you brought up the Baskin Robbins analogy, in that, yeah, part of the issue is I go to one guy and he's selling me the fear of, well, you don't want to run out of money in retirement. You don't want to go broke before you die. You don't want to outlive your savings. So let's get you into an annuity income for life. Or have you thought about
that's not an advisor, that's a salesman, but go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. So then it's okay, it's a salesman. How do you know the difference between an advisor and a salesman?
We had at our annual conference for the club, Andy Panko and I had a breakout session of how to find a real retirement advisor. Because we get asked all the time. And we did the prep beforehand, and it ended up being, we don't know. The ones that we know aren't accepting clients because they're too busy. And so it was a really frustrating scenario or session, because in my opinion, most advisors are either unconsciously incompetent, they focus on investments that they don't do real planning, or they're consciously incompetent, or they're on the progress on the journey towards mastery. But the vast majority are looking to build business, right? So they're sales and service organizations, not planning organizations. Now, if you're a real planner, you do have to have some service. You do have to have new clients. But our industry is structured such that it's all about mainly sales and service, not the actual practice of being a planner. And that puts you as the consumer in a pickle, because it's hard to ferret out and you got to go kiss a bunch of frogs. And it's annoying. I get it. I'm sorry.
And it's not immediately disclosed. They don't just open the conversation with, hey, I'm fee-based today. When we talk about managing your investments, and some of the advice I'm going to give you is fee-based. But when I switch over to selling you long-term care insurance, that's commission-based. They don't just come out and say,
right, they're wearing two hats. And they, you know, and legally they have to disclose the potential conflicts of interest and how they manage them. So legally there's a structure there, but it doesn't happen overtly for you, right? As a consumer, and that's, yeah, I agree with you 100% how difficult it is. It just makes your job more difficult.
So it seems like the community you have built around Rock Retirement Club, that type of peer network, other real examples, people who are they've navigated this road, they've been down the process, same frustrations, they can share that experience. And that's a place to go where maybe you do have your own agency, you have some alignment of interest, and maybe you have some people who have nothing to sell you. They're at this forum in Fort Worth. There's not going to be five different Edward Jones people asking you to move your account to them.
Yeah. So the club came from the podcast and all of this. I'm a pretty agile guy, Coulter. So I had no plans to create it when we created it. It just sort of kept iterating and here we are. So a couple reasons why we created the Rock Retirement Club is I thought of the consumer, right? The consumer is faced with two basic choices right now, in my mind. Either one, hire a financial advisor and either pay commissions or pay assets under management fees, and you know, which can be very substantial. And you have to be all in with them if typically, or DIY it yourself and go on the internet and get resources. And I view the internet as just one big sales funnel. Almost all content, retirement related or anything, is designed to capture your eyeballs to either sell you something or put ads in front of you, right? You learn that when you're on YouTube and you're like looking at buying a new camera, a new bow or something. And you're watching all the reviews on, you know, here's this latest camera and here's all the features. They're doing that so they can show ads to you or get you to buy it through their affiliate link. So that taints that kind of review. You're not getting an honest review because they're not going to say it sucks because they want to. And so that's how I view the internet. So the choice for individuals is hire an advisor. And we've talked about how difficult that is. Or go on the internet and try to find the tools and the education of how to do it. But the problem is everybody's trying to sell you something there, and you got the regular trolls and crazy people. So we created the Rock Retirement Club, which has a fee to go into it, where we brought together over 1,000 people that are all in similar stage of life. They are very intentional and they are focused on creating a great life. And what we do within the club is it's a safe space. We don't talk politics. We don't talk religion. We talk about identifying agency and what should I do next. And then we have a masterclass where someone goes through at their own pace to build their own retirement plan step by step. And I teach them how to do it. I give them the tools to do it. And then we have this community that's all following the same process using the same tools. And within the club, nobody sells anything. It's not a business acquisition for me. I don't need any more business. It's not for any of my faculty. It's a safe place where you're going to get world-class education with nobody trying to sell you something. So it's not tainted by that.
So where would be a good place to start for, does it matter whether you're 35, 45, 55, or 65?
For what?
For this retirement, getting involved and understanding. Yeah. So self-advocacy, your own agency, saying, you know what, this shit is not getting any easier. I keep getting pitched long-term care insurance, income for life annuities, and my 401k is about to go down 40%. And I've asked my financial advisor to readjust my account 7 times. And he just says dollar cost average over time and you'll be fine at 6% annual growth. And it's like, no, I need to get a restart. I need to take a fresh look. How do I do that?
So probably the best place to start in my little ecosystem is my podcast, which is the Retirement Answer Man. It's a weekly show. And all I think, you know, the premise of the show is you don't have to survive retirement and feel like you're being acted upon by the outside world. Is if you do the work in an organized way, you can lean in and rock retirement. And all I do is think about how do you think about all these things logically? So if you ask me at my core what I do, I'm a decision-making partner and I'm a project manager. I care about logical thinking. And it's so easy not to have that in financial decisions. So it'd be the podcast.
Okay, the podcast is a good place to start.
Yeah, we have the Rock Retirement Club, and we open that about three times a year for new members. But the podcast is a filter for that. We typically don't talk about the club outside of the podcast because that's a good filter, because people listen to me and they'll say, that dude's an idiot, and never listen again. And then the people that how we think about things and our culture will self-select themselves, which makes a really nice tight group that join.
So I start listening to the podcast and I start taking notes as I'm driving. My wheels are turning in my head. I've got ideas, but I need a soundboard. I need someone to talk to about these ideas. And I have mainly my questions are, what are the rich doing for retirement? What do the elite, the wealthy of America, what do they do? Because I hear of things like Peter Thiel. He used his Roth IRA to invest in Facebook, which grew 40,000% from his seed money. And now all of that is going to come out tax-free. And it's like, well, that's a pretty good idea. Why didn't my advisor recommend that to me? Or someone talks about a self-directed IRA, and me being self-employed, I would like to use my IRA to invest in more real estate, which I currently can't do. So I'm listening, I'm getting ideas. Then where do you go? Are there other peers that you can just call them and be like, hey, here's what I'm looking at. What's your experience? Do you have a person who could help facilitate this?
Well, we have weekly meetups within the club, and generally everybody in the club is 50s, 60s, right? I'm going to poke you again, Coulter. You ready?
I'm ready. I can handle it.
The examples that you gave is what I call bling. You know what bling is, right?
Bling. It's all shine.
It's all shine. It's all shine. It's all tactics. And there's a point to enhance in some fancy way, right? So I'm looking at you. You look like a chic ranch dude. You got your vest on and your ranch hat on. You look good, right? So you got the basics, right? You got your pants on. Thank God. I hope you do. I can't quite see. You got your shirt on. You got your vest on. You got your hat on, right? Those are the basic things you got to have, right? Then when you got the basics done, now you can think about the bling of planning. Right. I don't know. Do you have a bolo tie on, or whatever it is a rancher dude's going to do to bling up their outfit, which is probably not much, right? Not into bling so much.
I should incorporate the bolo tie. Those are badass.
That could be your trademark. That could be your go-to. But those things can enhance the journey, but it's very easy to let those things lead the discussion. Right. Because if we start to go there first, and I'm all for enhancing journeys, I like that, but most people want to focus there and not on the basics, because the basics aren't exciting, right? You put your pants on every day. It's no big deal. But when we think about wealth, and this is something your generation doesn't get, Coulter, millennials.
That's the preaching we're used to.
Right. That's right. No, not for me, baby. Not for me. And actually my generation too. And it started really happening in the 80s. Because in the 70s and 80s, the 401k plan and IRA schemes really started to blossom and pensions started to go down. And that's when the financial industry ballooned on a personal one-on-one realm, right? And so the dollar cost averaging story, the long pie charts that grow and grow and everything else got marketed. These firms, all the major firms you can think of and all the independents have billions of dollars that have preached, invest, become a millionaire, invest, invest, invest. Partly because you had to grow your assets, but other because that give us the more money to invest, give us the more money to invest. And so this, what wealth is and how you create wealth has been perverted. You go traditionally in how wealth is created, it's created through your work, right? You run a ranch, you buy more property over time, and then you run the ranch at a larger scale. You build a business. Or if you work in a corporate environment, you earn an income and you spend less than you earn, and you take that excess, which is the free cash flow, and reinvest it in yourself or reinvest it in other things. And wealth is created that way. Investing traditionally in public assets, bonds and stocks and things like that, the traditional role of those things were to preserve and grow your wealth over time, not to create it. But that's all been perverted. Now we talk about, no, it's all these financial schemes you can do to create wealth. And it's not what it's meant to do. So it forces us to go down a lot of really bad rabbit holes of strategies that sound great, but they're really stupid and not well thought out, and take too much risk. Like the Peter Thiel one, as an example, well, it's predicated on him buying the right stock and it actually working, right? That's what the whole thing is predicated on. I tend to push against all the bling because it misses the point, right? The way Coulter's going to build wealth is, number one, by creating a man that is really capable at what he does and constantly growing intellectually and professionally, so he can use that capacity to increase his income, whether it's through the business that he has or the ranch that he's running, et cetera. That's where wealth is created, especially for you youngins. The money part, that's where all the, you know, that human capital is what you need to focus on more than what the latest and greatest strategy is. All right, I put my soapbox away. I'm sorry, man.
No, I love it. Bring it back out. Cause yeah, I'm eating this up. You hit on several topics that have been top of mind for me. I think in some of my own private personal discussions, talking about investing plus lifestyle. So two kids, a new one, 2 weeks ago, a 3-year-old. And you got a growing family. You're also trying to grow a business, trying to invest, trying to work the tax schemes, the 401k, IRA, college savings. And then it's like, okay, well, the housing market is difficult.
For sure.
The housing market is difficult right now. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and actually I will plug him. I don't think he'll mind me saying this, but Nick DeCastro, the founder of landtrust.com, who has a hunting platform, outdoor recreation. We were talking about, I might like to relocate to the Bozeman, Montana area, but right now just isn't a good time, you know, excuses, because that real estate market is super inflated, low amount of listings, high interest rates, you know, all the typical excuses. And I said, you know, I think the answer is just wait, just sit on the investments and the CDs and play it safe and wait for that market to crash 40%. And he goes, or just make more money.
Well, that is a lever, right? And the younger you are, the more you should focus on that investment, is your capacity to make more money. And it's hard timing wise. I mean, I'm trying to build a house in Colorado right now, and we already have the land, already have the architectural work done. And the builder just came back like a month ago with, you know, this is what it's going to cost. And it was like 50% higher than what we were expecting. Right. And that's difficult.
Yeah. Texans, you guys have been colonizing Colorado for a long time.
I know.
Now you guys are
better
trying
us than the Californians. Better us than the Californians.
Yeah, and now you Texans are trying to colonize Montana too.
I know, it's probably really, hey, you have more Californians coming over there. They're in Wyoming. All the pretty boys with their beautiful, bling ranches. So,
oh, absolutely. You nailed it on the head. So then
Texans are a little bit more of your culture.
Well, that might be a stereotype or a preconceived notion,
it is.
But So yeah, I think the answer is just make more money. If you're got the pains, if you're struggling about what you can afford and how long it's going to take, the answer is go make more money. And so then, Roger, I saw you had a comment, but I gotta get this out there. What really pisses me off is I would prefer to invest in myself, in my own business, but I go after that carrot being dangled in front of me for the college savings account, tax write-off or write-down, the 401k tax write-down, the IRA tax write-down, the HSA tax write-down. I go for all the bullshit and I invest in other people's companies. I invest in their stocks and not my own stock. And it pisses me off.
I understand that. So I can understand that. In a great book, I'll plug a book. A great book around this concept for anyone that is called So Good They Can't Ignore You. It's by Cal Newport. Probably the number one book I recommend to anyone thinking about, you know, developing their ability to earn an income and have options. And it talks about building career capital. Part of, I think, what happens, Coulter, is we do these, it's like shopping at the grocery store when you're hungry, but you don't know what you want to eat, right? Is that we just randomly walk down the aisles and things catch our eye. Oh, that tax deduction for the 401k, I'll put that in here. That IRA, Johnny's doing this business deal, I'll put a little money into that. And we just sort of grab this tapestry that doesn't make any sense of stuff by individual decisions rather than having an overarching vision of where I want to go and strategy to get to the tactics. And this is just strategic planning, right? It's very easy to go tactics and never really have a strategy of what do I want? What's your wife's name, Coulter?
Krista.
Rather than go, like at your age, and I do this at my age, so it's not a generational thing, is I've always tried to make decisions of where do I want to be 3 to 5 years from now, right? I don't think you have to plan much longer than that. I mean, you want to think longer than that, but for you and Krista, what do we want our life to look like 3 to 5 years from now? Where do we want to live? What atmosphere do we want to have around us? Who do we want to be near? What kind of day do I have? This is how I built my business, because I was when I started my independent firm in 03, and we had a downtown office. I had local clients, and after the podcast and my journey there, I divested myself from my partnership. I work from my house. I only have clients nationally. I rarely meet in person. I have location and time freedom for the most part. I did that. I had intention to do that, and I made decisions to get me to a point where, like, I'm going to Mexico to play golf next week. You know, I go to Colorado for 5 weeks a year until we build our house there. But I did that because I was thinking 3 to 5 years ahead. So all these little decisions, but you have to have a vision so you can create the strategy. That way you can say, oh, that's BS. I don't need to focus on that. No, that doesn't work for me right now because it doesn't align with where Krista and I want to go. And that's, I think, the problem with not just you or me, but everybody, is it's not organized enough. So we end up just throwing stuff in the cart. Not just you, me too, baby. I'm the same way.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. So we did 3 years ago, we did a family mission, vision, and value statement, as you would for a startup, a new business, where, and I've got one on my wall here for the business, where you have your mission, you have your five core values. Yeah, core beliefs and values, like you're showing there. We have our 5 points of vision. Culture is another one. What kind of culture are you creating? And then 5 points of strategy. And we did that 3 years ago, probably before our first child, which that our income was drastically different 3 years ago, pre-2020. The market, the price of assets, cost of living, all that's drastically different today. Second child. So I guess it'd probably be best if we sat down and revisited that mission, vision, value board.
Well, I think I was actually literally thinking about this before we got on. I don't know why, because I saw this. I have an older version. I think I have another older version. I think this one's different. No, it's the same one. But I have like three or four different versions of this for the business. And I think that's the point, right? We'll go back to Agile. And I think of this with retirement planning or financial planning or business managing the business. Is all of this is written in pencil, and it's a framework to constantly make little decisions, right? So my old joke used to be that I'd talk to somebody and I'd say, you know what the key to a great marriage is? You know what that is, Coulter?
I do not at this point. I'm sorry, Roger.
Yeah. It's half joking, right? You know, my key to a good marriage is, I've been married 33 years, and is never to have a big conversation with my spouse. If I can avoid having a big conversation, I'm probably doing okay. Right? Because I didn't let anything fester.
Right. Lots of little conversations.
You walk in the room and you see the face and you're like, oh boy, this is going to be a big one. Or you have something uncomfortable that you need to talk about. And the way that I've learned, I'm not perfect, but the way that I've learned is the way you don't have big conversations, say with you and Krista, is you continue to walk hand in hand. Because if you don't have little conversations, sometimes uncomfortable conversations, what will happen is that you're walking together, you just start to walk this way and not even realize it. And then one of you will wake up, or there'll be a pressure point, you'll look across and you're like, you know, yards away and you're like, holy crap, I don't know who you are anymore. Right. And that's, and that is true with planning. So like I would argue, you know, and I'm amazed that you've done that, because most people don't do that for their business, much less their personal life. I have my top core values for my personal life too. Is this is something you should have regular meetings and not have to go through some deep thing, but where are we at? And that great time to do it. Let's say you do it twice a year. You update your net worth statement, which is my favorite document. You update your cash flow statement, which is another great document. And you sit down and you figure out the direction, say, for the next 3 months, the next 6 months. What's one thing we can do right now to move us towards where we say we want to go? Pick one or two things and say, okay, let's just do this one thing over the next 3 months. And that helps filter out all the BS that we get presented all the times. And then when you get presented with a investment opportunity, I have a meeting today with a potential partnership with someone, and I'm really excited about it. They're a great person. I can see lots of matches, but I can see some issues, and I have to filter through. Does this fit? Does this fit this? Even though I like everybody and it could be fun, but does it fit my mission? That helps you filter through it to guard you against yourself, right? And I think financial decisions are the same way.
That has, I can attest to a new marriage, growing family, changing income dynamics over the last 3 years, that we often have to say, well, we gotta go look at the board. We gotta go look at the mission, vision, values board and see how this option or this opportunity fits within our goals. Yeah.
When it works well, that's how it works, right?
Which, yeah, I guess, you know, now that you point that out, I can say that the 401k and the what I call bullshit tax schemes, they did fit in the last 3 years because my income, my business were at a risky point. You know, real estate is always risky. Starting a new business is always risky. And so to bring in that type of stability, well, at least you got the 401k, so you won't be destitute when you're 65. You know, that type of fiscally conservative and structure I think that was good over the last 3 years at Fit. We brought in that stability, that balance, but now it's like, I think we need to revisit the board, or, you know, you said it was written in pencil. It's time to use the eraser on some things.
I have private real estate investments. I deal with a lot of people that are business owners or substantial real estate investors and owners. And what I would argue a little bit on financial assets, 401k, et cetera, they don't have to be conservative. It's just the difference in structure, but it's a different asset. Is the default generally with somebody in real estate is more real estate, like we've talked about, right? For me as an entrepreneur who runs a couple businesses, my default is investing in my business, right? I'm comfortable with it. I'm betting on myself. It's a write-off. My default is to invest in my business and not take money to a 401k or to some other investment. And that is good to a point. I think because there's a false sense of efficacy and confidence there. And we tend to discount all the things that could go wrong. Right. And because it's just our natural domain and we feel like we have control and we all have a lot less control than we actually do over everything. Right. And so I think actually a 401k where you're maxing out for you and Krista and it's invested in equities that you never look at is a really good complement to all of the other things. One, it's a good discipline so you don't get over your skis. I used to have a oil and gas client long time ago, and everything that we managed on his behalf, he called it his don't go broke money because he knew he was a deal junkie, right? And real estate is an amazing investment, but it's not the only investment, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong. They tend to go wrong quickly, right? It tends not to reveal itself because it's not priced to market like stocks are day to day, and you're not thinking about the economy and everything else. You don't find out until the end or when you have to refi if you're using debt for it. That's when you start to reveal it. So when they go wrong, they can go really wrong. They're much more binary and illiquid. That's a great investment vehicle, but it's not everything. And we tend to think it is just like my business and investing my business. It feels much safer, but it's not.
Yeah, there's that bias, as you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Roger, this has been wonderful. I appreciate this for my own personal benefit. And that's part of the reason why I do the podcast is I bring on people that I want to glean from personally. And then I just drop it and share it with anyone
That's how I've done my podcast for years. I had no clue. I'm coming on a ranch investors podcast. I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, but we'll have fun.
Yeah. And so for our listeners, ranch investors that are interested to hear more, you mentioned So Good They Can't Ignore You as a book. We will put that in the show notes. Your club, your meetup in Fort Worth, and your podcast. Tell us one more time about those.
Yeah, the Retirement Answer Man podcast is the best way to listen to me more. It's a weekly podcast we've done for 9.5 years. And all I do is noodle in an organized way of how do we take baby steps to create a great life or rock retirement. So that's the best place to connect with me. My website is rogerwhitney.com, which is where the podcast lives. Those are the two places.
Okay. Well, if anyone has any questions, how can they reach out to you? And is it directly through the website or social media?
Yeah, I don't do much, if any, social media. That's the best place is the website. There's a place to ask a question, and we answer a ton of questions on the show.
Well, thanks for coming on the Ranch Investor Podcast, Roger.
I enjoyed hanging out with you, Gen Xers.
Yeah, and if you and your Texan buddies make it up to Montana on your conquest of other states, be sure to reach out. Give me a call.
All right, Coulter. I appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Roger.
Click subscribe on your streaming platform so you know when the latest episode has dropped. Be the source of knowledge and the maven that other professionals are excited to refer.